Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This episode of Believe is brought to you by Cryptid Coffee Co. Use promo code BELIEVE on checkout for 10% off their Angry Yowie coffee blend. Head over to cryptid.com.au to check them out.
It was just the most massive thing I've ever seen. To tell you the honest truth, I thought, well, we're the only ones left on this planet. Something's happened. We've missed something here.
The fear that went in me when I seen it was just the feeling, I'd say it was fear, but I've never felt that feeling before in my entire life.
It's a weird feeling, like you can't explain it when you don't know. You feel like you're being followed, but you don't know what it is.
We had two to our right, another one in front of us, another one to the left, and another one just across the road, shaking the daylight out of the tree. All we get is a big red eye.
I remember waking up and looking at the end of the bed, and there was a figure there, almost insect-like, and then I blacked out.
Welcome to the show, everyone. My name is Cade Moyer, and you are listening to the Believe Paranormal and UFO Podcast. If you have had an encounter and would like to share it, please get in touch with me. My email address is believepod@gmail.com. If you enjoy the podcast, be sure to leave us a rating or review wherever you listen and head on over to our website, believepod.com, and consider becoming a member to get bonus episodes and video content. Tonight I'm joined by Ben, and Ben had quite an unusual encounter in the Australian bush back in 1998. Ben, welcome to the show.
It's good to be back, Kate. How are you?
It is good to have you back. And key word there is back, because this isn't your first time on the podcast. You are actually a returning guest. Maybe some listeners don't know who you are, but you actually guested on a live call-in show that we do once a month. And the story that you left there was just absolutely mind-blowing. So for anyone who is interested in that, you have to become a Believe Plus member to listen to that. Highly recommend doing it. You can cancel your subscription right afterwards if you really, really want to. But Ben is an incredible guest, and I'm so excited to have him back. Ben, I need to know what happened in the Australian bush when you're out there all the way back in 1998.
Yeah, it was a 1998, you know, living the 90s dream. Around that time, I was 15, and it would have been spring, roughly, you know, coming into summer. It was probably the term three holidays from high school. Myself and my two-year-old black mastiff named Piera, the two of us, we were setting out for my usual, you know, weekend. As I said, it was the holidays, but like I'm pretty sure it was a Saturday or a Sunday, so like a weekend of bush adventuring. And while we set out for when we set out for the bush, where I happen to live is very interesting country. I know I sort of mentioned it to in the show that I happen to live near a very old and probably, if not the first, asylum that was built in Brisbane. I believe it is the first that was built in Brisbane, that way back when in the 1800s. So this place is it's now largely heritage listed, and it's cordoned off. It's all falling to pieces. It's not being built into anything now, but it's very old and it comes with very heavy energy. So my young puppy and I, as she was only 2 years old at the time, we started to head north-northwest past the buildings towards the direction of the river. And we were hugging the bush along the waterline while proceeding to walk in the direction of Walston Farmhouse. I think I mentioned this in the last show too, that it's, again, one of the – it's the oldest farmhouse that still exists from that time period. In the 1800s. So heading that way, it's a good walk, and there's a certain amount of distance. I want to say it's roughly 15, 20 kilometers towards the farmhouse. When we hit the bush, we had to hug the waterline, more or less, while trying to sort of stay above the high tide mark. And for a lot of the walk, we were through, you know, we were walking through shrubby, sparse, easy you know, it was very easy to navigate and see into while we were approaching, you know, clearings. And it was just basic, sparse, bushy scrub that you see when you're down by the Brisbane River usually. But it does change in certain pockets of the areas where there might be another creek coming out. So it thickens up quite densely. While heading this way, there's a little known island just between Wacol and what's known as Prize Pocket or Moggle. And while we were walking up towards this little island, it was upon approach that my dog and I, while we were walking, we were having the best day ever, you know, just meandering along, enjoying each other's company and just being out there in the Australian bush, as you put it. So we weren't seeing anything more than a scrub turkey, some birds and lizards and the odd brown snake. But while we were walking through this vegetation, it started to thicken up, as I said, as I was mentioning, when we got towards a creek or something coming off the side of the river. And it became thickets of heavy green, like leafy climbers or lantana. As we were beginning to make our way towards, you know, the thicket, where as the bush line got really dense, that was when I started to notice that everything went really, really quiet. I mean, it's like the life was sucked out of the bush. And you honestly could not hear anything other than our footsteps as we were moving. So what had been, you know, enjoyment was this sudden feeling of high alert. And my dog, she wasn't on a lead at the time, and she would always walk right beside me on my right, and her pace and her usual bumbling through the bush seemed to stop. Well, she started to stop and was moving far slower and quite cautiously with her head up and her ears pricked. And it was at this point that we started to notice that there was a strange sound that was made at the same time. It's a really hard thing to explain, and I'm usually not lost for words, Cade. But when I recall this sound, it is so strange, because what I perceived it to sound like was almost like a woman's shriek, only that it was mechanical sounding. That's bizarre to say. I wouldn't say a robotic sound, but it's like a woman's voice coming through a really, really old speaker, only with a static attached to it, if that makes sense.
It wasn't like it was like a metallic sounding kind of voice or anything like that. It sounded like it was almost projected out of a speaker or something like that.
I want to say certain words, only they don't seem to suit it when I say distorted, because that almost sounds like it was distorted or discordant, because while it wasn't a very nice sound, like, it was harmonious in the sense of the woman's scream and the mechanical sound being one and together. So that was like a joined sound, but I've listened to not only people that have been on your show, but also on Dean's show, and describing mechanical sounds. It's very, I don't know, I don't hear it very often, but when I do hear the mechanical sounds, I'm like, I prick up to try and hear if anyone can describe it in a particular way. And it seems that it seems to elude a lot of people when it comes to describing it, because I haven't found anything to compare it to.
It's a very unique type of sound that you are trying to describe, because you're not the first person that I've heard try to describe it and kind of not be able to find the words for it, because it is such an odd type of noise to hear that it's so unnormal that you can't compare it to anything.
Unnormal is the word. Yeah, it did, because I didn't quite explain how I kind of got here with all of this stuff, and that it's because of prehistory. This happened so long ago, but very recently remembering a lot of this stuff as it came forward. And so while I've been lost in the going back there and allowing it to come through, it was such a distinct and disturbing, not just feeling that came with it, but because of the sound, that the sound lingers with me even now. And because it's something that, strangely enough, you know, when you can't place it in the Australian bush, I believe certain things will always bug people that little bit, so it stays along with them. And that's why to this day, it still bugs me. The initial sound is what really, really bugs me. I should continue on with the story, because it's what came next that kind of added to it and really made it. That's where things really went south. So as I was saying, my dog was right beside me on my right hand side, and she had started to notice that something, with the bush going quiet, something was up. But we were following the river line and making our way to the approach of the thicket. And as I made my way down to the thicket bush ahead of us, that's when my dog just stopped dead in her tracks, and her head lowered, looking directly forward. And the instant she stopped, I know I'd heard something and that's what still bugs me to this day. And as to what kind of sound it was, very unusual. It sounded like a woman was being spooked or snuck up on, you know, like the shriek that someone makes when they're surprised. And like I said, it was only mechanical. That's when my dog's attitude just changed entirely. I looked down, and her toes were spreading into the dirt, and she was tensing up, and she began this low growl I've never heard before, and I never heard her do it again either after that. And that's another reason why this whole day stuck out. All her hackles on and the hair on her back ridge just stood up, and her tail was between her legs. She was on high alert, she was scared. I'd never seen her like this before, nor after, and she was glued to the spot. I need to point out that I never saw anything. Obviously, I was on high alert, so was she. But I definitely knew that I wasn't alone, and she knew it too. So, as I mentioned, this area is known for its awful its history. You know, with being an asylum, it comes with quite an awful history at that. There are spirits around for sure, it isn't very old. Not far away from where I was is where the Woogaroo clan had their pullin', or there was a Boer ring, but a fighting ground. So very old, ancient areas and places to be around. I know I was already sort of well aware, I already had heightened senses when I was that age, so I was well aware of, you know, what could already pre-exist, but... this was different, as I'd never experienced anything. So when we stood at the edge of the clearing, that's when I took one or two steps forward, and I noticed what my dog was doing immediately, looking down at her and seeing her hackles up. And that's when another sound came, and this sound, it's just like a really painful, that's the horrible word to use. I'm so sorry to use painful, really perturbing, disturbing feeling that was projected as it came out, the sound. It felt like it went straight through me. And I know at the same time that my dog felt the same, because it's like we winced at the same time together. And it was the most simple, like a barking sound, like a very quick bark, just high-pitched and slightly aggressive, but it was very quick, so it was only like a very, like almost like a chirp of a bark, if that makes any sense to you at all. When I heard that is when it was like I needed to back out and get out of there. It truly disturbed me. I appreciate that I was a smart 15-year-old and that I didn't just take off and run out of there like a crazy person. And thinking back on it, had I done that, you know, what might have come out after me. I mentioned that I never saw anything, but I definitely felt the presence of something. Something was there. I did hear that, not only with the sound of the bark, but it like a shifting footstep, but it was just a shifting in the bush. And that could have just been something brushing up against something or shifting its weight. That was enough for me to, as I said, start backing away. And as soon as I started to back away, I started, you know, to, my dog was doing the exact same, making the same movements. We just went backwards in a direction towards the road, which I knew was up towards the back of me and would have been roughly 200 meters away. And I always was aware of where I was going. I had a really good sense of direction. I wasn't your, I didn't just folly out into the bush. I always had a good sense of where I was going, what I was up to. I had a packed lunch, water, you name it. So the only thing I didn't have was a compass, but I knew the direction that I was by heading backward. I was heading south, southeast, heading up to the road. I refused to turn my back until I hit the road. my dog literally did the same as I did. Both her and I started to back out. Once we felt safe is when we turned around and we sort of walked away. And then nothing else happened from here on. Nothing chased us. Nothing came out aggressively. But continuing the walk down on the road, and we still had to go through a lot of the bushland that was around us or nearby to us, there was sort of a permanent sense or a permanent attachment of the sense of something, had like something something's watching you. And that feeling stayed with us for quite a while. I want to say that it was quite early in the morning when this happened. Like it wasn't late in the afternoon or anything like that at all. In fact, I was up with the sparrows, and it could have potentially been around, say, 7:30, 8 o'clock in the morning when this happened. And once it did, I know that I got home well and truly before lunchtime from where I was. So from the time that it happened, I was home well and truly before lunch. So it would have been maybe 10 or 11. I made my way home because I was really bothered by what had happened. And yeah, that's the crux of it.
I can hear how much this encounter has affected you, Ben, because you can hear the uncertainty in your voice talking about everything that happened, and you can hear how much it actually affected you in that moment, because your retelling is fantastic, and it really does put me right into the moment with you, and it genuinely sounds terrifying.
I actually, as soon as I start to go back into it, I go with the memories, and I know what I explained to you last week with being an empath. Kind of, there's more to add to the empathy, clairvoyancy, clairempathy, clairsentience, and claircognizance, and a bit of precognition. And I know I'm using really big words there, but I have a more thorough assessment of what plays in and what affects me. And if I go back to said moment, even now I can feel it like sitting in my because it's come up, I've allowed it to sort of come through. What existed from before, what I felt, I remember, you know, the nervousness and the feeling scared of something, not knowing quite what that was, and it was playing off of a lot of things that had come up from childhood that didn't make sense. And I haven't explained this to you yet, but when I was much younger, I was my cousins that were the same age as I used to stay over with them quite a lot, and their house was over in Red Bank Plains back in the 80s when things were being developed. And when we used to stay out there, a few things happened out near the bush out there that always bothered me, and I was always scared of the bush out there, and I always felt that I'd seen a face staring at me in the bush once when I was younger out at Red Bank Plains. And this is something I'm working on. I haven't got all this information yet, so I'm still going back to those memories. But what I do know is that that triggered something, and I would stay at my cousin's house and they would watch horror movies. It was just their thing. Them with their dad, these two boys, my two cousins, they would laugh at horror movies, but I would be, you know, quite perturbed by gore and things like that. But they would watch another movie, which was PG rated. And I was absolutely terrified of it. And I don't know if you remember from 1987's Harry and the Hendersons.
Yeah, absolutely.
I actually would. I had night terrors because of that movie. So I've always had something that existed. And now I was terrified. But even then, they used to say, like, they're not here in Australia. That's only in America. And I used to hear that then. But I, you know, and you don't know anything when you're this age, and you know, your parents don't know anything, and they don't have knowledge about, they don't, you know, they've never seen anything, therefore they don't talk about it. It's just a myth. As I said, when I started delving into this, and I remembered that having happened, like, because I was already sort of scared of things, even in that moment when I was 15 and just leaving that bush, I was thinking of those things from those days when I was younger, of Harry and the Hendersons and what could be in the bush even then. So it's what's always, like, I know these things and these links have always existed, but and why, but I've only started to figure this all out now. And sure enough, you know, in the last few years, I've nosedived into your show, Dean show, Sarah show, to get more on the paranormal because of all these things that have occurred, you know, to myself. But, yeah. Sorry.
No, it's all great context, because I actually forgot to mention at the start of this interview that the podcast that you did feature on, you did explain that you're an empath, and that's one of my questions for you is, like, how young were you when you realized that you were that little bit different, that you could feel things that not everyone else could feel? And now a quick word from our sponsor.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Also, are you wanting more content? Why not become a Believe Plus member? You'll get access to exclusive podcasts and episodes that aren't available to the public. Not only that, you'll also get our regular feed without any ads. Head to believepod.com/plus to sign up today for just $5 a month.
I've always known that I've had heightened senses, but yeah, there's been a couple of different sort of I call it stages, but the obviously moments, things that occurred, and in those stages affirmed it with me. So there's more than one thing, but as that occurred, it only made it stand out stronger and made me definitely believe it within myself as well. And I think a lot of people who are ever faced with any of this stuff, and as we usually, and when you are usually faced with it with no information whatsoever, it's awfully scary and terrifying. And you know, we all know that through just society and culture, that, you know, what happens to crazy people. And I live near that asylum, by the way, so I'm very, very much aware of what can happen to someone if they're deemed crazy. So, you know, there are times when I've shut down completely and never said anything. I mentioned that last time. I definitely would like to, at some point, get a lot more out to be a bit more helpful with, you know, how did I get here? How did I do that? And we definitely won't have enough time in the show to do that tonight. But just where we were before, how worked up I can get in a story, it's because I can reconnect to that. And when I was talking to you then, I was allowing myself to really feel where I was back then. And it does. I get almost back into the 15-year-old self, and it comes out just as I am telling the story, because I can feel it. I know what was there, and I allow it to come up. So,
yeah, it is a really great retelling. And, you know, there's so many things that really stand out for me about your encounter and I'm sure you've made this connection, and I think the listeners have no doubt made the connection that, you know, this is a potential Yowie encounter that you had. One of the real standout things for me was, you know, the bush just kind of going dead quiet, creating that almost vacuum like feeling, which is just so unnatural for the bush.
I don't know if you've ever stood in an amphitheater.
Yeah.
It is, and that sense when you're in an amphitheater, because everything sort of can carry, it's almost like if you dropped a pin, it's going to carry that far as well. You know, any movement that you make seems to be 100 times louder than what it was only a moment before, when, you know, the bush was erupting with its usual cacophony of noises.
I would imagine it is a situation that feels just absolutely surreal, because your senses would just be heightened to a level that would be unimaginable. And with you being an empath, that really would have been almost like a sensory overload for you.
And it definitely, and even now, as I said, I know that you can more or less call some of these things, you could call it a trauma in a sense, because, you know, and I know that for a lot of these stories that come through to show, there definitely are traumas. Can't take away from that. I wouldn't say that mine was, you know, to a high extent of trauma, but because it's something that is so unusual, it causes certain kind of fear and anxiety, and steps, especially when you I used to go out in the bush all the time on my own, and I know I did have particular times when there was things that felt out of the ordinary, and I, you know, I went with a lot of that, because it's kind of what tells you where to go and where not to go, if that makes sense, when you're rampaging freely through the bush. But at the same time, just being aware of your surroundings. This time, you know, it was that unusual, because we all know that, you know, the worst that we've probably got, we've got some pretty gnarly things that get around. You know, people from overseas wouldn't know just how many feral animals that have come from all over the world live in Australia, and that includes the three types of wild deer. And these are all by the Brisbane River where I live too, so I'm aware that there are deer and pigs and wild pigs and even wild dogs can make their way down this far, very rarely, but back then it was a bit more common than what it is now. Knowing what's out there, like I said, I was running into brown snakes. I was always aware, you know, if anyone that walks out in the Australian bush is not that silly, because we have things like death adders and brown snakes and and big spiders and you name it. So it's funny, because just as I said that, I was thinking of drop bears. And isn't it so unusual that we literally do have like this euphemistic, but we have this social story that we tell as Australians to other people, especially, like, we all love telling it to backpackers and telling them about being aware of, you know, the drop bear. And here we are with our living, breathing drop bear actually out there. You know, like, it's not a myth. It's just not a koala bear with teeth.
Yeah, the irony of it all doesn't ever fall flat on me, because a lot of people joke about it, but it's kind of like, you know, give it a couple of extra feet in height and, you know, you got yourself a genuine Yowie running around out there.
Correct.
So I want to talk about the shriek that you've heard, because, you know, everything that you've said here is, it does ring bells for a Yowie encounter, because I hear so many people who have non-visual encounters with a Yowie, where they hear almost like a woman in trouble, like a woman screaming in, I don't know if it's in pain or in terror, but that's the common element in a non-visual sighting.
Yeah, and I have had, like, that's one of the reasons, you know, I've paid attention to various, I don't even like calling them stories because I hear them as truth. So when I'm hearing the tellings that are coming through from everyone relating to sound, and majority of them, when it leaned towards like a female sound, or at least a female sounding sound. So I've always wanted to, I wish I'd queried Dean on this, when I actually messaged you on one of your shows that you joined up on, but I wish I'd asked him that about more the less the female sound, because it seems that obviously I don't know if it's the males are seen more often because they can be a little bit obviously less scared or being territorial, whatever the reason might be. They seem to be seen more frequently as opposed to more of a feminine one or female one, and they seem to be a bit more of the rarer sided. But, you know, obviously if they've got that kind of sound to, you know, like if the same as we do in our own society, in human society, if a woman will scream, it will grab the attention, or a child screams, it will grab the attention of the male nearby. So it didn't sound, when I think of it, it didn't sound male because it didn't sound masculine, and it did. It reminded me of a woman screaming. Only what really disturbs me is how it sounded, because it did. It went through you, traveled through you at the same time, like an unnerving feeling. Like I was almost, the Yowie, was nervous, I was feeling either its nervousness or it was wanting me to feel really, really nervous, but like a projected sound.
Yeah, and that's really only something that has an incredibly large diaphragm is able to project something like that.
And then everyone talks of infrasound and, you know, that elephants and tigers do it, and because it does, like, there's a resonance to it, there's a vibrancy, and obviously because I mean I refer to it as sound, and I what happens with me as well, I always feel electrical interference, not all the time, but and that, I say not all the time because you know I can be near a power point, it's not going to be that kind of crazy, but the higher the electrical frequency, I can always pick up on it. And so I actually can't handle a lot of like being somewhere that's too close to like a power station or anything like that. So the electrical interference bothers me, and that's kind of how it affected me in an electrical sense.
I was wondering if you were on the same thought pattern with it being infrasound, because one of my questions was going to be that you said this kind of had a physical effect on you, but did you feel kind of nauseous or like dizzy or anything like that from it?
You don't notice that, I guess, all of it immediately. I want to say that could be that I was at the time, but as I piece it together now, it felt like that kind of came a little bit after, and that the first major feelings that came through were fight or flight, you know, the that kind of right on edge kind of fear, and you know, that's something that you obviously to take notice of, like how many times in your life have you ever really felt that? And I grew up with actually being afraid of dogs. I know that sounds really crazy that I had a dog right beside me, but when I was younger, it was a fear for me that I overcame as a teenager, and that's one of the reasons I had a dog. But when I was younger, like I knew what it was like to be scared of something that was bigger than me with sharp teeth and things like that, that could growl and made me feel that way. But and this was, like I said, it was by 100 though, you know, it wasn't the same. It wasn't like a dog next door just barking and giving you a bit of a fright. It was much more powerful, frightened, and hyper aware kind of frightened, where everything becomes super alert, your hair stands on end. As I said, my dog's hair was standing on end. We were both, alert. Like I felt like I was almost hovering off the ground because of the sound, it almost lifts you off the ground in a moment. And you go back a bit. I didn't feel impacted like I was knocked to the ground or anything, but you definitely feel something because it comes through and travels through you.
Infrasound is just one of these things that, you know, you really only hear about it in a handful of cases. And, you know, your encounter, it is so unique. And you're such a unique individual yourself, Ben, because of being an empath. I wonder if that had any kind of significance to the way that you felt in that moment.
Well, hence the life investigation currently, and you know, wanting to get this out. My last talk to you, I'm kind of, this is my therapy to you know, to explore this. And you know, I would speak for, and I'm going to say this before the end of the show, but I would speak for so many. What was hundreds is now becoming thousands of us that are out there, and it's not just, you know, someone that will sound like listen to the show and hear something that I might say and think that they're like myself. It's the fact that they'll listen and they'll hear anyone's story and connect to someone and to something and allow them to feel free to be able to do the same, because that's kind of where we're at now. Like I feel like we're on the precipice of everybody coming forward with so much of what goes on more internally within us as human beings, you know, like stop worrying about what's more on the outside and the superficial layers, and look what's more deeper and always been with us, you know, all these things have always been with us. It's a reawakening in a sense.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like we're on the cusp of a paradigm shift in so many different ways.
And I could go on. I mean, I've got more to add on all of that stuff too, but, just yeah, coming to you with this story, speaking to you on the other show, in order to get this out, because you know, it's not only helpful to for myself to allow it to come out. I know that there are, you know, I'm connecting with the other people that have been coming out over the last, well, since I know, since you've been along, since Dean's had his show, in the Yowie sense, when we'll be coming forward with these stories, because I've lived in a few different places around Australia too, so, and I feel really connected to this, you know, this country. It's obviously one of the reasons why I've come into a life to live, you know, located in Australia. And I've been to some wonderful, magical places I don't think a lot of people would be able to step foot on, and or if they ever would get the chance to, especially with the islands in North Queensland. I know you're from Cairns. I lived on Dunk Island. I also lived on Bidara Island. I lived on Lizard Island. for at least 7 years of my life, those three islands, they're like the jewels in my crown of places I've been at, one, you know, wonderful places I've been able to live. Also, I lived over in West New Britain, in Papua New Guinea, and also in Broome, Western Australia. Very spiritual places. And through those travels is where I've been taught by various people. And I was told about brownies, and or these names started coming up that I'd never heard before, about the brownies, the Junjati, or various other names that I didn't write down tonight. I wanted to tell you, but they're not, I didn't feel they were my place to say, because they're when they come from culture, and I just want to respect the cultures appropriately and not give out all the information that they've said to me. When they've said it to me in privacy.
Yeah, no, I totally respect you for that, because, you know, Aboriginal culture is such a, I guess, a passed down tradition that not to take away their, I guess, their history, but for you to tell it in the way that maybe they don't want it to be told is,
yeah
I completely get it.
And so I by just wanting to put forward that, you know, that there were different names, and then, you know, the different stories that I was told, and especially up in Cairns, coming a bit south of Cairns, because I live south of Cairns, just in from Innisfail in Babinda area, where, you know, the Tully region, where those islands are located. And while mentioning that I was up there learning these stories, I happened to also live up there at two separate time periods, and I was on either island, and I went through both cyclones. I went through Cyclone Larry and I went through Cyclone Yasi. I've gone through some really intense stuff, and I will come back to talk to you on a number of these things. But those storms, those stories, these places I've been, like, I carry all of this with me now. And here we've finally come to, like, a precipice point where I'm able to, over the last couple of years, to piece a lot of this together and see the bigger picture. And I'm no longer fooled by the rest of the world, if that makes sense. I'm no longer pulling the wool over my own eyes. And because if you listen, if people sat down and listen to the news, it's basically going to formulate your, the news will formulate your opinions. It will tell you what your opinions are. And I woke up to that around the same age when I was 15, you know, like that I didn't want to be brainwashed. I wanted to think for myself. And this is where, like, it's come full circle now to not pick on myself and say that I am crazy about having these said abilities or feeling this way and learning these things. It's bringing me up. It's bringing me forward and standing into it, more or less, and stepping into it. And I feel more real than I've ever felt in my life. I don't feel as though I'm pressured to be a particular way other than myself. And I know that's not easy. That's no easy mean feat. This has taken a long time for me to get that way. But by just coming out and getting onto your show, sharing my story, feeling the impassioned way I do, and telling dribs and drabs of my stories, I feel, you know, empowered because of your show. And I hope that this does connect with other listeners across the world to come forward with their stories, share it with us all. You know, this is a big community of us out there. We're here to support you, you know, come forward and, you know, fall into our arms. You know, we believe you. We believe.
And I think that's a really powerful message there. It's, I think a lot more people should be accepting of things they've encountered and things that they've experienced and things that they can do and feel. You are a great example of that. And mate, I couldn't agree with you more about the news. I haven't watched the news in about 10 years. Nothing ever good is shown on the news. And I really do love the way that, you know, you are embracing this new form of life for yourself here. It is, I would say it is a great example for people who have ever encountered something that they can't explain.
Cade, you are much this person yourself, because you are setting this up for us to come out. You know, it's not just your belief in us. You know, this is, I'm here for you because you've put yourself out there to do this for all of us that are sometimes, I know that I was too scared to come out and come forward. Because there was no, it's not so much having a safe space. There was no forum. But it feels safe. That makes sense. It's not something that I worry about being, as I mentioned to you last time, I'm in a stronger place within myself to be able to stand up to the haters and the bullies. It's not even standing up. It's like that just melts off me nowadays. But that was, it's not to say that I never felt those things. I was very aware that I needed to point that out from having not said that last time, that, you know, I've been a very affected person while going through all of this. And I think we all do it where we have to maintain normality and go on with life. So, you know, you'll see people around you. And this is one of the reasons why I'm very bothered by people with arrogance and narcissistic types and arrogant people, because quite simply, you know, we could have had a really, really bad day, any of us, and especially as more hypersensitive people like yourself, myself, and a lot of the listeners, and how they feel, like we take on a lot. So all it takes is for one person to walk up to us with a bad attitude and tell us something really awful, and we'll feel wiped out. We want to retreat. You want to go away. You won't feel safe enough to speak or talk for any reason, because, you know, the world's against you for whatever reason. But to all those listeners that have the struggle within them right now, you know, just hang in there, because I'm not going to say that it will get better. It's more that it will come forward. It will come forward. You will step into yourself more. The more you want to get, the more you get to know yourself, the more you net and you dive deep to get to know yourself, you will find it. You'll be able to step into it. And that's about as much as I can put forward at this moment.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Believe Paranormal and UFO podcast. If you have had an encounter and you would like to share it, please get in touch with me. My email address is believepod@gmail.com. Finally, don't forget to follow us on all our social media outlets and be sure to join our Discord server to talk to other listeners of the show. You'll find all these links in our show notes. Thank you.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.